Hello and welcome to another episode of The Greynado, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 332, and it's proudly brought to you by the always-growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynado.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined, as ever, by my friend and co-host James Stacey. James, how's it going up there?
Hey, man, pretty good. Yeah, we got proper summer weather. I'm stuck down in the basement. It's a little chilly down here, but I'm doing really well. I also read, based on your comments from last week, you were saying how quickly the year went by. We're recording this June 3. June 2, yesterday, was the halfway point of 2025.
So, wow. Yeah, crazy.
It's really it's nuts. Moving quickly for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
How have you been? Feeling back to normal?
Yeah, I'm finally, I had a good week. I had a good week of exercise, finally felt back to full strength. And nice. We had, speaking of summer, I mean, we had two recent days, yesterday and the day before, of, you know, full-on kind of scorching summer humidity and heat. Also with the Canadian wildfire smoke drifting down. So we've had some pretty dramatic sunsets and sunrises. And but today it's raining and it cooled off. So it is a sleepy day here as well, though, although I think we'll both do our best to stay awake for the episode. But it's been good for the garden, and that's what I've been largely doing. I mean, I think I mentioned after I got back from Scotland, it felt like time was of the essence to get stuff in the ground, and it's already really responding. I've got tomato plants have doubled in size, and I'm already harvesting some herbs for, you know, to cook with and that sort of stuff. So that's largely but what I've been up to, is just keeping ahead of the weeds and watching plants grow.
Nice.
I joke I'm the constant gardener, you know, make a reference to the John le Carré
book. Sure.
But yeah, it's been great, kind of classic early summer, and here we go, off and running. How about you? Yeah. You've got a very different sort of set of priorities this month.
Yeah, I haven't. I mean, since you recorded the last episode, I haven't really done anything other than work and, you know, try and just get things ready for the baby to, you know, as much as we can. I think we're like largely ready. At this point, we're within a couple weeks, so anything could happen. It could be this afternoon. It could be in the better part of a month. So it's just kind of that red zone where, like, we're not making a lot of plans.
Yeah.
You know, and probably the furthest afield we're going to go is up to the cottage. So right. We'll get up there this weekend, got a little bit more work I'd like to try and dig into. And then I also mm-hmm. have something very fun, nerdy fun, to be clear, but a certain type of fun, that I'll talk about at the end of the show that I'm excited to set up at the cottage, this coming weekend. But yeah, otherwise just working, man. It's a busy time of year for Hodinkee, because it's the one time of year where kind of the press cycle takes a breath. You know, they catch their breath after the Watches and Wonders and the rest of it. So as you, especially when you're talking July, August, you know, a lot of Europe is, you know, on vacation. And I think you see a lot of that in North America as well. So just trying to get as much done and get the team ready for a little bit of a leave that I'm going to take. As we've said before, we'll probably call a flyer on 2 weeks of TGN. And then go back to either pre-recorded chats or just episodes where I'm a complete zombie. We'll figure it out. It'll be okay.
Right.
But if everybody's okay with us taking a couple weeks, I think that'll give me the space to kind of get my head back on post, you know, baby's arrival, and then we'll go that route. But we've got some pretty good guests kind of in the hopper, in the conversation, you know, in talks for some episodes over the summer, which should be fun. Some names we know, some new names, all that kind of stuff. So it's coming together, but it's a busy season, and, you know, I'm trying to take a chance to smell the roses occasionally.
All right. Well, speaking of watches, we have a very watch focused episode and a summer focused episode, but before we dive into that, what are you wearing today?
Yeah, so with the theme, you know, kind of being a summer watches draft, a price point draft, that would allow, you know, a good synergy with summer. I thought I would wear one of my favorite summer watches, which is my Seiko Orange Monster. So that's the SKX 781. I got this in a sort of trade with Chris Soule, our super moderator, and a good buddy. I don't wear it a ton. I do feel like I've really become a titanium guy. And this watch feels so incredibly heavy because it's steel and it's in big solid steel bracelet. But at the same time, that summer vibe, you can really try watches you might not normally wear whether they're larger watches or heavier watches. This is not going to get in the way of a sleeve because I'm wearing t-shirt and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm wearing my Orange Monster, and there's just, God, man, there's something really, really kind of like, feels like summer break from grade school when you're outside and you see that orange dial and then you walk inside and you see the loom from the sun.
Yeah.
That's a that kind of twofer, the color of that dial in the sun, and then the way it looks when you walk into the house, into a, you know, an air conditioned basement or something like that, and it's glowing
right
so nicely. It's just a great watch. They're so much fun.
Yeah,
I do lament this era of Seiko.
Mm-hmm.
I do lament the passing of this era of Seiko when we had the 781, when we had the 007, the 173, the 009, like these watches that were like bread and butter under $250.
Yeah.
And, you know, the watch game has changed so extensively since that was the kind of core. But there is something really pleasing about putting this on. I was you know, with my family this weekend, and my dad was wearing my SKX 007. And, you know, it's just nice to see them out and about. That was such a great time for value in watches.
I always associate or have associated Seiko with summer anyway. I think
yeah,
probably goes back to my very first Seiko, which, you know, I kind of got after working all summer to raise money for it. And then it just felt, it was some, you know, Pepsi bezel automatic diver of that era, the 80s. And it just, on the big long rubber strap, they feel like real summery watches because you do so much kind of physically active, you know, stuff that you don't want to have to worry about your watch, and that they just feel like perfect watches for that. And then they're fun. And then of course the loom and the water resistance and all that stuff just kind of make it perfect.
Yeah.
For that.
That's awesome. What did you wear for the show today?
Yeah. I'm a bit of a broken record because I'm still wearing the Pelagos FXD. And I think I mentioned last week that, I just had been wearing it for a few days and decided that I was just going to embark on that full month of wearing it, as we discussed with our tournament earlier in the year, that we were going to commit to wearing the watch that won the tournament for a full month. And I just had been wearing it for, you know, I've kind of lost track, actually. I probably should go back if I'm going to make this official. But it's probably been two full weeks already. So I'm already halfway into this full month of wearing it. And it's a higher end version of what I was just talking about with Seiko, because I just feel like it's the kind of watch that disappears on my wrist and yet has this great loom and of course water resistance and ruggedness and casualness to it that goes so well mm-hmm. with, you know, t-shirts and swimming in a lake and gardening and that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's what I've got on.
Yeah, I mean, look, like we're sport watches guy. We kind of always have been. It's what the show's based on, that sort of thing. And like sport watches make the most sense in the summer.
Yeah.
It's where they really come into their own. It's where whatever the fault of that watch may be, and I don't think there is a fault for an FXD, to be clear, but you know, if you think of something like a Ploprof, you know, big, chunky, you're not something you would wear with certainly a suit jacket, mm-hmm. but even just like a long sleeve shirt is going to be an issue. An Aqualand, you know, a big cool Doxa, like whatever you're into, summer really opens those doors to like more options. I'm wearing more on my wrist and less on my feet is kind of how it goes.
Yeah, that's summer, which is quite
a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I love it. And there is something about summer where it's a little bit more minimal. You're not wearing a jacket, so you're carrying less stuff in your pockets. If you're me, I'm projecting this. I'll say this more clearly. For me, there's something minimal about like the summer EDC.
Yeah.
I might carry more things in the seasons where I wear a jacket commonly. Like I'll get to a point in the summer where like I don't even bring my wallet with me. I'll just pay with my phone. And it's just easier to have like it's phone, sunglasses, watches, and sandals, and you get out of the house, right?
Yeah.
Get outside and feel the sun on your skin. And I really like that kind of clarity. I really love now like the little ritual of like picking the watch I'm going to take to the cottage for the next 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, to cover the weekend, because it's kind of intentional. That's a space where like loom matters. Mm-hmm. In the little bedroom that we stay in at the house, there's no like easy reaching for a light. So you can either have a watch with good loom, or you have to have a watch that you know, you can view with a flashlight or something like that, but then you're waking people up and it's disruptive. So you want to be able to jump off the dock. So you need something with good water resistance. You want to be, you don't want to have to take it off if you're running a chainsaw. Like it's a sport watch vibe. And I always get kind of pumped about picking what I'm going to wear for that given, you know, stint of time at the cottage.
Yeah. I'll just say my 1950s Navitimer is safely tucked away probably until like October or something. It's just not.
Yeah, absolutely. Not, I mean, these humid months even alone, let alone, you know, diving off of a boat or a dock or even, you know, really warm, you know, maybe less so where you and I live, but you go down into the southern states and you go inside to a cold air conditioned room from a very hot exterior, you know, I've seen it wreak havoc on vintage watches, old cameras, things like that. So definitely something worth considering. But yeah, it's sport watch season. We're into it. I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty much only wearing the CWN1. Mm-hmm. It's in sort of a constant mix rotation with the Doxa 200T,
yeah,
which I just love. But today I wanted to go with a Seiko. And so we went with the Orange Monster and with your FXD, I think that's a great pick. You know, not a tough watch to have to wear for a month, certainly.
Yeah, right.
Well, good stuff. You want to get into our little sort of draft price challenge here?
Yeah, good segue. I mean, we're talking all about summer and how to pick a good summer watch, and lo and behold, that's our topic for today.
So we wanted to do something like a draft. We've done this in the past, so we didn't want to directly copy that sort of thing. So it was more just a consideration of like three very broad price points and what you could find, and then there'll be a little segment at the end for some strap options for these watches as well, because I think summer's also a time where like you can really mess around with the strap and try some stuff and see what really works for your wrist. But the categories that we're going to be sort of running into here are sub $100. So this is like a watch that will probably cost you less than dinner in a major city. Mm-hmm. And then sub $1,500. I would say this is sort of the bread and butter zone of value for watches right now is, you know, I think what used to be maybe $600-$700. $800 in the earlier micro brands in the days of when SPBs were in the high three figures rather than low, very low fours, that sort of thing. So $1,500 to the next one. And then finally, you know, we love to talk about our Tudors and that sort of thing. So we did have a $5,000 category. I think about this fairly often, Jason. I think five is actually a pretty high ceiling for this. But like, where do you think the line is where the amount of money you're paying, you're now really paying more for brand than necessarily getting like a substantially better watch? And I think that's fine. That's a huge part of watch collecting is the brand.
Yeah.
But I, you know, there's a number somewhere and it's definitely under five where you're transitioning into being able to have that luxury side of buying something that you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't actually add in, like having a certain brand on the dial probably doesn't add any functionality to it. So you're buying it for luxury reasons. Right. So I think that's the option. So it'll be 100, 1500 and 5,000. I thought it was a pretty wide spread. But I think it should allow for kind of three different conversations about summer watches because three very different price points.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think that upper tier, you know, what immediately came to mind was, you know, you and I have been around the industry now long enough that we remember when like Omega was still in that mix, you know, you used to be able to get the 2254s and even the you know, Speedmaster for, you know, whether it was secondhand or new. I seem to recall, you know, the Speedmaster still hovering in the $4,000 range for quite a while. Now they're,
I think it did for quite a while. Yeah.
Yeah. And then certainly the Seamaster, you know, the 300 diver for years, you used to be able to get them quite cheap and you still can find them for, you know, secondhand, the old ones that aren't made anymore. But I'm just looking at, I was having kind of a dialogue over Instagram with somebody who was looking at the new Seamasters and was like, boy, they're up around 6,000 for like the basic ones, you know, the no date with the aluminum bezels. But anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but yeah, I think 5,000 can get you still some pretty decent watch these days. So, let's dive into it. Let's start with our super bargain basement, fun summer watches. What do you got for that category?
Oh, if I'm going to go first. So I didn't want to just play the hits.
Yeah.
There are some of that in my three, but I wanted to offer something where like I'm actually considering buying this watch and I do not need it. To be clear, I have two of them.
Yeah.
But this is a watch that you can get for about, I think, $97 was what I dug up. I don't think it's your absolute best way to spend under $100, but I think if you want to get close to the $100 mark, this is a very interesting and cool option that's also really, really conventional and easy to wear. You can put it on a NATO. You can put on different straps. This is the Timex Atlantis 100, which is currently being offered by Timex Japan. I've owned versions of this going back 30 years, almost. Actually, almost exactly 30 years, probably 31 at this point. I was around 8. So this watch originally, like the Expedition series, came out in 1991. It's $93 to confirm. And this is sort of, it's like somebody took an 8-lap, the OG model, and kind of crossed it with a more conventional case. So you have like standard lugs, a 4-button layout, and then you have the kind of asymmetrical time display where the hours and minutes are quite large. Mm-hmm. And then the date and day and such are a little bit smaller above. I really like the industrial design of these watches between the blending of the steel case and the black dial shroud and bezel with the very easy to read. And then they come on a rubber strap. I used to have 3 of them. I still have the green, yellow, and the full white one of the 2 special versions that were done with a retailer in Japan. I like this one the best, the one I'm actually recommending, which is the TW2U31000. It's the Atlantis 100 in its most standard spec of black over silver. This is a straightforward, ready-to-wear, put it on and do your entire summer without ever worrying about this watch. If it's dark in your tent, you've got Loom. If you want to go swimming, you've got 100 meters of water resistance. I've definitely seen people take these diving. It's a real 100 meters. You get an alarm, you get a chronograph, you can time burgers, you can, it's one unit of fully proven, nice looking, totally inoffensive digital sports watch.
Yeah, and you can, despite the fact that it's not an Ironman triathlon watch, you could do an Ironman. You could do a summer triathlon or 5K. You could train for it.
Yep.
Like this is a classic sports watch. I mean, it has
the
alarm. It's got the chronograph, all that stuff that you love. But then if you just want to wear it to tell the time, yeah, it'd be great for dock jumping and chainsawing and all that other stuff you mentioned. And I'm actually showing on the Timex Japan site, they're selling it for $68 USD.
Oh, okay. So that's 93 must be CAD. They don't have a number here. So that's great. $63. I might buy one of these. That could be a problem.
And then they've got the bracelet version for $75 if you want to go that route with this bracelet that has like a black center links, which isn't my cup of tea necessarily, but like, you know, that's pretty sharp as well. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The plus for me on this one is the fact that unlike say an 8-lap, which is a watch I love. I've talked a lot about them. I own several. But the plus with these ones is the ability to put it on whatever conventional strap you want. If you're feeling a NATO, put it on a NATO. If you're feeling rubber, put it on a rubber. You want the bracelet, buy the bracelet. Want to put it on a Perlon? That's kind of a cool option.
Yeah.
And I love a digital watch. I really, really do. And then, you know, a lot of times these days when you see people wearing digital watches, they're sort of the hipstery sort of throwback Casios, mm-hmm. which I like. AW500s are great, but an AW500 was $45 a few years ago when I wrote the story for Hodinkee. And now they're like $130.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm this is Canadian, but still, I like the Timex better for that reason versus the Casio.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't think that under $100 you're going to really crack into the like a proper G-Shock. Mm-hmm. You might be able to. You might be able to at the right price of maybe a 5600, but for that, like if I'm going to spend that kind of money or if I'm going to go into the G-Shock realm, I want, you know, radio time calibration. I just like these a lot. I think that you can do a bunch with them. You could make them interesting with a different NATO with a mesh. Like this on a steel mesh would look quite cool and quirky and weird and very summery and fun. And I just love that this is, you know, it's a great example, not unlike the watch that you're going to talk about in a moment, but it's a great example of just like a pure grab and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a watch that does the one thing. It's a Timex digital watch. It just does it. Great sport watch.
Well, for my pick, I did go with, I am playing the hits and I am going with a Casio. This is the Casio F91W and it's a predictable, maybe some might call it a boring choice, but like it's $23. I mean, it's $22.95 and it's a watch that, you know, you might think, okay, for that price, like it's disposable. It's a watch that, you know, I'll wear and throw away, but it has a 7-year battery. It has a, you know, 1/100th second stopwatch and a light, and they don't even give what it's water resistant to, but I think I've seen people dive with this watch, you know, and And if it floods, they don't care because it is $23. But like, this is a watch that is legendary for a good reason. It's the most, you know, kind of basic Casio digital watch. It's not a G-Shock, but it goes a lot of places that G-Shocks go and probably survives most of those situations pretty well. And I think, you know, there was a, this is somewhat related to my final note, but there was a, I think there was an episode of, or a season of, you know, the Long Way Round series with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman on their motorcycle adventures, where McGregor's wearing one of these on the long journey. And, you know, you see these pop up on, I think Sting used to wear these when he was, you know, with the police back in the '80s. And like, this is just such a basic kind of classic watch that totally flies under the radar. And it's so, I don't want to use the word anti-snob, but like, you know, it just makes a statement in how simple and cheap it is, like to show up on a, you know, a trip abroad or something and just have this thing almost shows that you just don't care. And yet you know, you still want to watch and something that does something. And I think, I don't know why I don't own one of these, because it's the kind of thing with a 7-year battery, like you can just leave in a drawer and pull out, you know, for basic duty anytime you want and just not feel bad about not wearing it very often for that price.
Sure.
Have you ever owned one of these?
I have. Yep, for sure. I think I paid $17 for one at a Walmart in Columbus, Mississippi, 20 years ago.
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It might even have been $14. It was a red tag deal for an F91 W on the sort of, I think it's a resin strap that I haven't quite seen as often. So it might have been a slightly different version than the W1.
Yeah.
Look, they are $17, $20, whatever they end up. You know, every now and then I'll see it go around Instagram that somebody finds a Amazon link or something for like $12 for one of these and that sort of thing. And you go like, at that point, you're not allowed to have any complaints.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, you're not complaining about the $1.50 hot dog at Costco.
Right.
You're just reveling in the fact that it's $1.50 and it's still a hot dog. Right. And as far as digital watches go, this one's about as good as most of them. And it's $20 or whatever number you're able to find it for, under $25. Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's remarkable and cool for my aesthetic and my general feel and my preference for Indiglo. I have a soft spot for Timex, but you can't take anything away from F91, maybe the most prolific watch made since, you know, the 70s.
Yeah. I think, you know, sub $100 is such a,
it's a tough category now.
And I think when we were proposing these categories, I was like, sub 100 is going to be tough, but like my mind went to Casio or Timex and Timex, I was, you know, you can get the easy readers if you want analog. I think your pick's great. The Atlantis wasn't even on my radar, but the F91 was like the first thing that popped in my mind.
Yeah. Expedition Safaris were up there as well.
Yeah.
The White Dial Expeditions I like quite a bit. I owned one of those back in the day from Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if we had done this in 2016 when the show started, both of our sub 100s would have been mechanicals. You know, you could get a, you know, an SNK 781 or something like a Seiko for under $100, little 37 millimeter automatic with a 7S movement.
Yeah.
And now you just, you know, that same value statement's not there anymore. You know, Seiko 5s are a couple $100, which are still great value, to be clear, but not the same as a $75 watch or whatever, right? That's an automatic.
Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of a different zone. And interesting for me, I actually, so we have quartz, you know, digital at sub 100, and then my pick at sub 1500 is quartz.
Right.
Which again, I think if we'd done this a few years back, it wouldn't have been.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, we used to be able to get some pretty interesting mechanicals. I mean, you still can.
Oh, you definitely still can, for sure.
To be fair, sub 1500. But I think maybe what's happened is the reputation and the quality of some quartz watches is elevated in those years, as opposed to, you know, mechanicals becoming out of reach or whatever. I think mechanicals are becoming more in reach as well. But I do like the good quartz options that are a little higher end watches nowadays. So you've got a good one. Why don't you go leap into that one?
Yeah, look, I wanted for this one, the sub 1500, I would say this is like my home base for watches. Is like I just have a comfort zone where I'm like I'm okay with a watch being about $1,000.
Yeah.
And I think it's where you really break into the sweet spot of value these days. Like I said, it might have been a little less money previously, but of course everything is more expensive now, so you can't expect something you don't need to become less expensive over time. you know, the appeal is the appeal, and that's why they can, you know, the pricing can go up. But with that in mind, you know, my summer, I'm probably going to wear my CWN1 all the time, which you can't buy because we, you know, made them in a limited quantity for people who pre-ordered them. But CWC does make the TI300 in quartz, which is the same watch, basically. But instead of a 12-hour bezel, you get a standard and very beautiful, fully graduated elapsed time bezel. And you get a nice CWC logo and a little TI logo on the dial as well. I think it's awesome. It's about 1,000 pounds. So that's what, $1,340, something like that, give or take. So it's under the $1,500 price point for sure. And, you know, I definitely hemmed and hawed on like, oh, I'm within $50 of a 200T Doxa, you know, which is a fantastic watch and a great summer watch. And maybe in terms of being summery, even more summery. Weirdly, again, for all the reasons that I kind of liked the Atlantis being this grab and go, no questions asked, you know, great loom, easy to wear, really no fussing with anything. I mean, the CWC doesn't even have a date. This is just a watch you pick up and wear. And if you need to time burgers or you know, this or that at the cottage, while camping, whatever, it all just works. And I think this is a sport watch that's good 365 days a year, but it's definitely going to work through the summer.
Yeah, and I'm always struck whenever I wear my CWN1, just, and whenever I even hand it to anybody to look at, they're like, this watch is so light. I think it came in at mm-hmm. 48 grams or something. And it is, you know, I've got a Royal Navy diver from them from 95, no date. It's, you know, largely the same, you know, form factor as this, but it's steel and it's a heavier watch, which it doesn't bother me. I mean, I've worn steel watches for many years and they make great summer watches, of course, but you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, like when you were talking about your Seiko, I've really started to wear so many titanium watches nowadays that I've become kind of spoiled. And yeah. I love that CWC is making a titanium version because they were always kind of big, heavier watches, even the quartz ones. And this really mitigates mm-hmm. that. And yeah, CWC makes a great summer watch. And I'm so glad that they've got a serialized version of what they did for us. And this is just a great pick. One little element of this that I love is, you know, they were, you know, in the old days, like following the MOD spec for watches, they had to put the little circle T for the presence of tritium in the luminous material for years. And then they switched to L when they went to Luminova. But I love that they adapted that to a circle tie with a TI for titanium. I just think mm-hmm. that was such a clever little addition that they did for this. And it's kind of a wink at what's new and exciting about this one. So yeah, I love this watch. This is great. And if I didn't have the CWN1, and even though I do have one, this still remains a kind of a tempting watch to get.
Yeah, I think they're great for sure. But yeah, with all those reasons out of the way, that's my $1,500 pick. What did you pick for a max $1,500?
Yeah, this was originally going to be $1,000 category, and then you suggested bumping it up to $15, which opened up a bit of a larger window for me. I was originally under $1,000, was going to go with a different Christopher Ward, but in this case, at sub $1,500, I'm able to get into one that's actually one of my favorites from them and one that I actually own. And that is the C65 Super Compressor, which is like, when you talk summer watches, you know, the ones we've picked so far have been, you know, largely pretty sober. This one's full on colorful, just yeah. feels bright and watery and tropical. And it's this Super Compressor case, you know, they actually kind of recreated the old Super Compressor style with the compression kind of gasketing system that closes down the case back tighter as water pressure increases. It's got the dual crowns with the internal timing ring. And then this one has this beautiful sunburst, like blue gradient dial with the orange zero marker on the bezel. And it's just such a, for $1,425, there's a lot of bang for the buck here. I think, you know, which is largely the case with most Christopher Wards, but with this one, like what you're getting with this sophisticated case and the internal bezel that really has a nice feel to it. And then this comes on a really nice steel bracelet. They're very accurate watches from my experience. And yeah, I mean, if you just want to go summer, and I will say that along with kind of NATO straps and rubber, I think a steel bracelet, like properly sized, can be just a wonderful summer choice because they just, they feel cool on the wrist. They don't really absorb, you know, obviously they don't absorb water. And they just look good against a tan arm, you know? So anyway, that's my pick for sub 1500.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, Christopher Ward definitely has a lot of power in this price point. And picking for under 1500, it's difficult. There's probably three or four Citizens I would personally own at that price point. There's probably at least a couple of Seikos, Christopher Wards, Veyer. Like, it just kind of goes on and on. Doxa. Like, there's a lot happening at this price point, which is why I wanted to extend it up to 1500 to make some room for kind of the extension of where that value has kind of pushed upwards. And I do think you can get a lot. Obviously, we're talking about spending 15 times the amount between the $100 watch and the $1,500 watch. But I do think you can get a lot at this price point. And I mean, it would be easy enough. You could do this whole draft a different way and come up with 20 great watches at under this price point.
Yeah.
So there's so many to pick from. And I think the Christopher Ward does a lot for that price point. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. The super compressor case, the colorway, the dial design, all that kind of stuff, and does it in a way that feels quite summery with the color spec. That feels like a watch that's ready for not just summer, but for like a vacation.
All right, we're moving up to the high end of our draft here, the sub $5,000.
Yeah, and I've shifted back and forth. I had a watch in there that was more like $2,500. You know, the most recent release from Doxa's, the 250T GMT, which I think is a great option. But if we have $5,000, I'm going to try and spend it. Mm-hmm. Try and get what I think is kind of the most interesting. And I've got to be really, really true to myself here. And I'm going with the Nomos Club Sport Neomatic World Timer that they launched just back in April at Watches and Wonders. I have one of these on order. Theoretically, I will get it this month. We will find out. There are 8 versions of this watch in total. They sell for $4,720. I would say that of the 2 standard versions, the most summery is the silver dial with the lighter blue accent versus the dark blue dial. That also has a bit of a red and light blue coloring on the 24-hour sub dial, which is a cool look. But if you extend into the limited edition versions, there's 6 LE versions that are all limited to 175 pieces. And I think for the summary vibe there, I'd either go with the one that I ordered, which is the Glacier, which is light blue with sort of a double red, sort of almost Flightmaster style subdial, and then like a tan coloring for the outer city ring. And then on the other side, while there's a jungle colorway and a dark red one and a gray one, there's also one called Dune, which is sort of a mix of some lighter brownish yellows. And I think that also has sort of a summer feel to it, but probably Glacier, despite being called Glacier. I do think it's more of the 2 more summery versions. But this is a neat watch. If you don't know it, it's, I think, one of the more exciting watches made this year. I mean, that's kind of silly to say because I bought one. 40 millimeter steel case, 9.9 millimeters thick. And then it uses the DUW3202 movement, which is an automatic movement that has a push button. Essentially second time zone, but the time zone is jump set on the local time using a city ring. So if you imagine it, it's kind of like an interesting combination between a dual time watch and a world timer. You know, I've harped on this before. I don't think it's actually important, but it is something I bring up. World timer does mean something. It's a watch that can show you at least the 24 full hour time zones all at the same time, instantaneously. And then you have passive world timers where you have to rotate a bezel. Braymont has done that in the past. Certainly, we've seen lots of city bezels on vintage watches, vintage sport watches from the 60s and 70s. Whereas what you have here is you're essentially coordinating the local time to the main time display, and you can jump set that by pushing a button. And not only does that jump the hand, it rotates the city dial as well. So again, not quite a real world timer, but a little bit different than your standard GMT or dual time. And then you have a subsidiary 24-hour dial that's meant to be your like home time, if that's an easy enough explanation. When I get one of these in, I will do a proper review of it, both here on the show and most likely one for Hodinkee as well, as I only got to spend 30-40 minutes with them at the show. But a little on the expensive side, but we had a $5,000 budget. This is right at the upper echelon of what I spend on watches. And I don't do it very commonly. This one is, you know, kind of timed for the arrival of the kid and that sort of thing. Theoretically should actually hit the mail roughly the same time the kid would be, you know, quote unquote delivered. So we'll see how that works out. But, you know, I'm a sucker for a dual time watch. I the older I get and the more watches I experience, the more I appreciate ones that have good use of interesting color. And I think Nomos does a really good job with that. Obviously, previously they did a zillion versions of the Tangomat or the Tangente in all these different colors for Watches and Wonders the previous year, and then they come out this one with the additional colorways. And yeah, I think it's a good one. It's one I'm pretty excited to get in and give it a run. And who knows, it may end up being the kind of the summer watch. We'll see.
It's a good pick. Definitely the hit of Watches and Wonders for a lot of people. I know for you, and it's definitely in the top couple that came out this year for me as well. And I think that's a great summer watch. Just the right amount of splash of color and kind of contemporary design, very clean. Feels like it would look great with a t-shirt, but you know, certainly a watch you could extend into other seasons as well. So good
pick. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice size. Good functionality. I think a cool look. And I think I've said this before, but like I've kind of wanted a Nomos for a decade, mm-hmm. but I just have choice anxiety as like, which one do you pick? It's a little bit like my experience with Grand Seiko. Which one do I pick?
Yeah.
How do I pick one? And for a long time, I actually wanted the most entry-level model they make, which is also a club, which is the Club Campus with the Cali dial. I think those are quite cool. But now if they're going to give me that look with one of their best complications, this kind of esoteric, you know, Zurich world timer thing, I found it very interesting, and I sent an email, and I guess I was, you know, emailed in time to get one, so that's good.
All right, well, speaking of watches we own or that we will own in your case, my pick for sub 5,000 is maybe not terribly surprising, but it's the watch I'm wearing today, and it's the Pelagos FXD. I must be having, like, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, this sort of resurgent love for a watch, or like, you know, you kind of fall in love all over again. And I think just throwing this on a couple of weeks ago and then committing to wearing it for a full month, and then the fact that it won my tournament at the beginning of the year, I truly love this watch. I think it just has everything going for it. And I think as a summer piece, you know, as I mentioned when you were talking about Seikos, like the Pelagos has become that watch for me. It's a watch that I don't want to baby. I don't want to have to think about it. It wears really easily. You know, I have faith that it will work, you know, and keep working through whatever I want to do with it, whether it's riding my bike or digging in the garden or, you know, swimming or diving or whatever. And, you know, I think in my mind that it goes to the power of marketing and also kind of the launch event that you and I attended back in September of 23, where we were in a hot, sticky place down there in Florida on the Gulf Coast, you know, diving and carousing on the beach and, you know, playing cornhole and, you know, drinking beers and sweating and all this kind of stuff with this watch. It was such an incredibly hot day. Do you remember that day eating under those tents out in the parking lot of the Man in the Sea Museum?
Super hot.
Like it's, yeah. That sort of thing kind of seeped into my brain, and it became this sort of hot weather watch in my mind. And I think with these fabric straps that are pretty much all it takes, or the single pass through rubber that comes with it as well, like this watch just feels quintessentially summer to me. And it's, you know, it's $44.50. You get the complimentary, they call it, rubber strap with it, which swaps out nicely and is a little more water friendly than the nylon Velcro that comes with it, because it won't absorb water. But yeah, I mean, what more can be said about the Pelagos FXD that we haven't talked about already? And it's,
I think we've probably said, yeah, it, but I don't disagree, yeah, at all. Yeah. I mean, this falls like right in with the CWC TI. Is like aesthetically, mm-hmm, not a summer watch necessarily, not a watch that feels more summery than it does a different season, yeah, but functionally super summer.
Yeah.
pick it up, go do whatever you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll keep up. You're going to spending your travel, your summer traveling, do that. Spending your summer, working on a cabin like I'm going to be, you can't do that. Yeah. You don't want your summer watch to be the type of watch you have to take off.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And there certainly are different options too. I didn't price it out specifically, but the blue version that they made, kind of in homage to the MN, the Marine National. Well, I'm looking, it's the same price. So blue countdown bezel, that might even be more summery. So go ahead, pick that one if you want. It's a great, great choice as well. Or the one with the carbon composite case is even cheaper. It's $4,100. So all good options.
Even if you wanted to go to the GMT FXD, you'd be looking at $4,625, I think, unless the price has gone up since it came out. But that was the release price for that watch. And, Blake, our buddy Blake Bettner, has one. And I just think that's such a good watch.
Yeah.
FXDs in general, just pick the one that works. Very cool. Yeah, good call. And a good stack of summer watches. For $100, you picked the Casio F91W. For $1,500, the Chris Reward Super Compressor. And then for a maximum budget of $5,000, you picked your personal fave, the Tudor Pelagos FXD in black.
Yeah, and you've got the Timex Atlantis 100 for your sub-$100 pick. The CWC TI 300 or TI 300 quartz for sub-$1,500. Great choice. And then sub-$5,000, your forthcoming Nomos Club Sport Neomatic with the world time or the second time zone complication. So solid six watch picks there.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of something there for everybody. Obviously, three wildly different price points, 50x across the spread. But I think the other side of it for summer, and we alluded to this a little earlier in the episode, is straps.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really mess around with a wider array of straps through the summer than I might otherwise. And certainly lots of people, this is the time of year where that's when you actually start going for just the bracelet because of the sweat and the rest of it. And I totally get that position as well. I really like a very lightweight, airy sort of strap that I don't have to notice the watch on my wrist, especially if you're going to combine that with something like the CWN1, which is nice and light to begin with. So look, we've each picked a strap or the platonic ideal of some sort of strap, but I'm sure we could come up with a few others. But as far as your pick for sort of a summer strap, what did you land on?
Yeah, so initially I was going with the company Zeeland with an E on the end. They make some really nice FKM rubber straps, and I've got a white version of those on my Omega Seamaster diver, and I just think a white strap is just so cool in the summer. And lo and behold, I was trying to kind of find something that would actually work on a Pelagos, which only takes pass through straps or your CWC that you picked, and they do make a single pass like straight white FKM rubber, and I was going to go with that. They're kind of spendy, and then I kind of backpedaled from that. And I'm going with a strap that I have from Watches of Espionage, which is their FKM rubber watch strap, which is a very basic rubber strap. I think, in the past you've talked about the superiority of the rubber straps that Marathon sells. And I think this is right up there with those. It's just a very basic rubber strap that in the case of Watches of Espionage, they've got a kind of a subtly branded back of the strap with their kind of spearhead logo in as kind of a texture.
Oh, cool.
Mitigate the stickiness of them. And it says, use your tools. It's got a branded buckle. It's just a great, simple rubber strap that I think will go with most any sport watch, unless you need a pass-through style. And they come in 20 or 22 millimeters, and you can get it in black or kind of this OD green, which is the one that I have. And, I just think a good rubber strap on a summer watch is kind of an essential if you're not going NATO or if you don't have a bracelet. So that's my pick.
Yeah, that's a good call. I really like the Watch of Espionage straps that I've come across. I haven't tried their rubber, but I have the CWC N1 here on my desk because I wore it all day yesterday, and I have it on their tan NATO.
Yeah.
I just think it's fantastic. It's just the right color. It's got a nice weave to it. Wears really well. I can't fault that pick at all. As far as my suggestion for like peak summer strap, I think a lot of you know where we're going, especially if you've been hanging out on the Slack. I'm going with the cheap mesh. Buy yourself. I think the one that I recently sliced up with a Dremel was $17 on Etsy. I'll do my best to include that link, but there's a whole thread, maybe even two threads on the Slack of people going down that rabbit hole. The cool thing was, and I mentioned on a previous episode, someone on the Slack had asked, like, hey, if you have one of these shark meshes, will it fit the clasp from the Doxa 200T? And I was like, oh, that's an interesting thing. I'll go double check. And it turns out the clasp just uses conventional end links, like spring bar end links. There's no like special fittings or press fittings or anything. So I was able to take it off, cut the strap down because the buckle's quite a bit longer than the standard. And that's what I've been wearing. And I think if you want to try the summer vibe, I think it's like 70s summer.
Yeah.
Try a cheap mesh. And if you have a bracelet that you really love that has a buckle that the rest of the strap can be fully removed, like some Seikos do this, that sort of thing, where it's literally spring bars that keep the strap in. It's like I said, it's not a pressed fitting or a semi-permanent fitting. Give it a try. I think it's a lot of fun. It's only one option. I mean, I probably will end up wearing more NATOs and Perlons this summer. And obviously we've waxed poetic on many, many episodes in the past of our love of the Bonetto Cinturini rubber NATOs. Those are also a really good choice, especially if you're in the scenario like Jason, where you might be wearing something that needs a NATO. Like there's no putting an Etsy mesh on your FXD, right? It's just not going to work. It is a fun time to just like experiment with other straps, see how they feel. I think you learn really quickly in the summer that rubber straps are not made equal.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them glue to your wrist and pull hair and don't vent correctly and are very uncomfortable and rigid and lift the watch up off your wrist and the rest of it. Whereas on the other side, other straps, other rubber straps, like you mentioned, this one from WE, and then we've also got the Marathon one, the rubber NATO, all that kind of stuff that you can really get a nice strap these days. Yeah. To be fair, the Marathon one is a premium price point. It's a more expensive strap.
Yeah. I always have a bit of a dilemma because I wear NATOs almost all the time, but then I feel like for proper kind of activities, like whether you're, you know, swimming or doing something vigorous, you know, whether it's on a bike, like a good rubber strap that you can just cinch down a little tighter than you might normally, that you can get wet and it won't stay wet. Like, it's just such an essential. But the beauty of NATOs is that, like, if you know your strap's going to get wet or dirty, like, they're so easy to just, like, let's say you're, like, in your case, going to the cottage or whatever, like, you just throw an extra one in. Like, you don't even have to have a tool. Like, you know, you just, it gets wet, you wring it out, hang it up, or toss it in a bag or on a desk and throw a dry one on, you know, put a different one on, and you can just swap them out as you need to. And I think that's kind of the beauty of that's living with summer straps right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a good note to kind of close out the draft. We've got six interesting watches, a handful of strap options. And look, I think this is something that anybody listening, if you're in the Slack, feel free to give us your picks for $100, $1,500, and $5,000. There's no way that we could have been holistic in our picks. You just have to pick something. And there's a lot of great options at all of these price points. And I'm always curious what people are finding that enthusiasts are interested in for less than $100. Because that's where you'll get people who go like, why that Timex that James picked is just a Timex. Like, I have a personal connection to these watches. I like them quite a bit, but there's lots of other options out there, especially if you're willing to go digital quartz, right?
Yeah, right.
All right. Well, cool. That's a fun one, and we'll carry on that conversation in the Slack. How about we grab some final notes and put a bow on it?
Sure. Yeah. I've been slowly working my way through the latest season of, as I mentioned at the top here, Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman's latest adventure on motorcycles. And this is a good one. It's called Long Way Home. It's on Apple TV. Continues the series from Long Way Round. I think they did Long Way Up, you know, in South America. Long Way Down, I think, was another one. They're just rollicking great adventures from two humble, fun-loving guys. And you know, they make such a great duo, because they're old friends and they don't take themselves too seriously. And the humility of both of them is really great. You know, Ewan McGregor is a legit big movie star, you know, the Star Wars stuff, Trainspotting, et cetera, et cetera. The Ghost Rider, all these great films. I just love the guy. He's got an infectious quality to him. And yet, like, when he's out there in the middle of nowhere in some little town and somebody recognizes him in a cafe or wherever they've stopped along the way, like he has no problem, like, just, you know, chatting with people, taking photos, just kind of being himself. You can just tell both these guys love what they do. And a lot of it, you know, it feels largely unscripted and just fun. They do a lot of this kind of diary cam, like selfie stuff, where they're just sort of talking into their cameras, and you know, they have mishaps and they don't claim to be experts in any one thing. And I love where they are. And this one is an interesting new premise. They leave from McGregor's home in Scotland, drive down through England, across the Channel, up through Germany, Scandinavia, and the episode I'm currently on, they're way up in northern Norway. And I believe the idea is that they continue down through Europe and maybe even Eastern Europe, and then double back and head back towards the UK. So as opposed to going around the world or across, you know, Mongolia or up from the tip of South America, this one is a little closer to their homes. And they're riding vintage motorcycles. So McGregor has an old Moto Guzzi that was a former, I think it was like a police motorcycle in California. And then Borman is riding a really beautiful vintage BMW motorcycle. And
That sounds great.
Real simple old machines that they rely on. And so far, so good with both of them. And it's been a lot of fun. And I'm sure this isn't news to a lot of people that have followed these shows. And I bet a lot of our listeners are already watching. But in case you aren't aware of the new season, check it out. Long Way Home on Apple TV.
That's great. Yeah, good pull for sure. Definitely has been on my list. And we've talked about it a little bit. It's definitely come up on the Slack. I don't think I've watched all of those. Mm. I saw the original.
Yeah.
And I don't think I watched the other two. So I guess I've got more to get into.
They're not
such a bad task to have to catch up on those, but
right,
probably worth getting into those before I get into the brand new one. Do you know if all of it is on Apple TV or just this new one?
You know, I'm not sure. It would be really nice if they all were, because then you could just kind of work through them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to see. But that's a good reminder to check that one out. That also feels like something I think like Sarah would enjoy, and maybe even my daughters as well, with their love of the Grand Tour and Top Gear specials and all that kind of stuff. And actually, you know what? I didn't even have this planned. It had escaped my mind somehow when I was making this. But before I get into my official final note, big shout out to TGN alum and my good buddy Thomas Holland. So he and James Engelman, his co-host, a partner on Throttle House and also Francis Bourgeois, have been announced as the follow-up hosts of the Grand Tour. So if you're a big Top Gear fan, Top Gear, those hosts eventually moved over to Amazon to create a new show called The Grand Tour. They kind of shut that down last year, or retired themselves last year in the final season of the show, and then just recently leaked that Thomas and James and Francis will be taking over. That's very exciting, kind of surreal, to be honest. But if you've watched any Throttle House content, really any of it, but we've recommended tons of it, you've heard Thomas on this show, if you've been listening for a little while, I think they made an incredible choice, and I'm so excited to see where the series goes when it comes out.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congrats to those guys. That's big news. I saw that yesterday and got pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it'd be a daunting thing to suddenly have that level, that profile. I mean, they already had millions and millions of subscribers, but this is like the Grand Tour is such a more general audience than automotive YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I am glad that there's like a core. Everywhere I go, every little like story I read, you go down to the comments and there's people saying like, I've been watching these guys for years. We've all been saying it. They are kind of the next wave of that like chemistry that Top Gear had.
Yeah.
So I'm super excited to see how it goes. Obviously, there's lots of examples of people trying to evolve Top Gear and it not working.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that gives them a lot of opportunity to understand some of the pitfalls. And I know that Thomas and James, I don't know Francis to be fair, but I know Thomas and James are both, you know, real fans of that type of media, as you see in what they create. So that's pretty exciting. An unplanned final note, but a huge shout out to Thomas. And if his new overlords at Amazon allow it, we'll have him back on the show whenever he would like.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I now have to work through publicists and, you know, media outlets and things like that. But all right. So my actual final note this week is, boy, if you needed evidence that I was, you know, 39 going on 50, I decided the other day that, you know, we now have internet at the cottage, like proper like fiber internet to my cottage property, to the cabin. And, you know, I'm trying to use that to help simplify the process of having the cottage. It's nice to have an always on, you know, sort of data connection. And I really, you know, I'm sure those of you who live in the same area as me or have a second property will understand that by the time about Tuesday or Wednesday comes around, you start watching the weather like a hawk. You're like, is this going to be a good weekend to get to the car? Like, am I going to be able to get these things done? You're like, I know I have to do this, this, and this, and I want to spend some time doing this, and I want to see these people. And if it's raining, all of that falls apart. Or maybe, you know, if it's rained all week, will I be able to cut the grass, which is one of the main reasons, one of the main kind of chores and all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted better weather data. And the area where my cottage is has a very broad blanket for the weather. The umbrella for the weather there is quite wide. And because of the geographic and kind of prominence of where my property is, we kind of get our own weather to a certain extent, or at least you get influenced by the lake, and the actual, you know, weather forecast can come from quite some distance away. So I started looking into weather stations. And it turns out they're not as expensive as I thought. Two, there's a pretty cool community on Reddit for them. And three, if you buy one that's Wi-Fi enabled, you can have it sync up with another service. So you can actually report the weather, like the localized weather, and then I can pull that data from a web server. The example here is called Weather Cloud. I think there's another one called like Wonder Climate or something like that. I'm still learning that part of it, but I did search around on Reddit for a while to find that you know, some decent reviews of a very inexpensive Wi-Fi enabled weather station called the Vevor 7-in-1, V-E-V-O-R. These don't look like this company makes them. If you Google around, it seems like there's a bunch of companies that largely all make similar sort of products, and they can really range in price. So I went with an entry-level option. This was actually on sale for $100 Canadian, so really not that much money. But you get, obviously, temperature, humidity, rainfall, wind direction, wind speed, UV, you know, pressure trends, which is the really helpful one, barometric pressure trending, and that sort of thing. And then it has like a screen that it comes with, which is like wirelessly attached to the, like communicating with the station. So you bring that inside and that gives you all this data and like little buttons. You can kind of swap the data and that kind of thing. And then you can sign it up via a web server to report this data. And then I would be able to pull it like just from a web, like I could load up a web page, a profile, to see the weather up at the cottage. Do I think that this is something I absolutely needed? Probably not. But it is very cool. I got it and immediately just kind of screwed it to my deck. Like set it up and screwed it to the deck just to give it a try. And I it's kind of fun to have. Again, I'm not sure I absolutely need it. We've done fine with the, you know, sort of like Apple Maps weather or whatever, like Apple weather on the phone. But I hope that this would give us just a slightly more accurate sort of appreciation of the weather up there.
Yeah, and it looks like it's got a solar panel for solar charging, which is really cool. Yeah, so you don't have to like plug it in.
Yeah, so you don't have to plug it in. It runs purely on solar, and then like I said, there's like a screen, this kind of goofy low tech but very easily read and easy to understand sort of screen that gives you some of that data.
Yeah.
And then the rest I'll figure out the web server and the rest of it once I'm up at the cottage this weekend.
Yeah, I love the look of it. It's got wind speed and wind direction. I mean, it's got the little spinning cups on the arms.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I mean, it looks legit. Looks hardcore. That's great.
Yeah, it kind of looks like you know the spinning thing on the top of like a yacht.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
you know I assume that's some sort of radar.
Yeah.
Or you know, what weather system of some sort. But I would say what I didn't necessarily expect, and I mean what do you really expect for $100 from anything these days? But what I didn't expect is just how cheap this would feel.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it weighs like a pound,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
So there's not that much going on in there. And I don't know with the longevity, but I found a bunch of people on Reddit had this model or an extremely similar model and had been using them like for several seasons. Mm. So, I mean, how much can you ask for the $100 bucks? I'm not sure. Yeah. But it's a brand new thing for me. I guarantee there's guys on the Slack and people who are listening who do the Weather Cloud stuff who have been into this and they're like, you bought the wrong one. You should have bought this one. I didn't want to spend $500. It's not worth that to me yet. I don't know the value of this yet. So this is a nice kind of intro to the option. That's kind of, you know, a step above the little single sensor you put outside that tells you the temperature or whatever. Right.
Well, that's great. You can
Kind of
you
fun.
You can wear your Atlantis 100 while you're installing your $100 Vivor.
Yeah, exactly. If you have questions about it, give me like a week or two and then hit me up on the Slack. It was very easy to like set up and install. The instructions were really straightforward. There's really almost nothing to it. So once I figure out the website of it, I'm happy to talk more about it if folks want, or we could do some questions on Slack or something like that. But yeah, a Vivor weather station. Nerdy fun. I don't know. Like I said, it feels like a very middle-aged move for me to suddenly be this concerned about local weather. So, well, hey, as always, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or even consider supporting the show directly, maybe even grab yourself a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Patricia Briggs, who said, "A man says a lot of things in summer he doesn't mean in winter."